my message today is all about turning your world upside down. But before I give you this message, I want to share a couple of things. I want to make a confession that I really love ceilings. I'm a huge lover of ceilings. In fact, you could say that I'm a ceiling fan. Now, this ceiling is nice. It's not my favorite ceiling, but it's up there. All right, I'll stop. I know, these jokes are all over your head. I get it. Don't worry, you will also have a time to moan and begroan jokes a little bit later in this service. But I appreciate you giving me this chance to kind of do things a little bit differently on this day, kind of throwing out the book and trying new things and trying different things. And I think that it's a wonderful opportunity to do things in a different way so that we don't get kind of stuck in a rut. I think it's also the times where we maybe are too full of ourselves, too self-important. It's always a good time to maybe poke a little bit of fun, not in a heretical way or in a way that takes away the meaning of what we do, but in a way that makes us a little bit less pious, a little bit more self-aware. And one of the things that that people are really attached to, I have found, is the way that the world looks. And when I say that the way that the world looks, I mean that the way that it looks on a map. When you look at a map, it does not look like this, right? This is not how a map is supposed to be. This map is upside down. But in reality, this map is not upside down. In fact, if you look at all of the words on the map, if you look at all of the countries and all of the labels, they are all legible, they are all right set up, they are all right where they are supposed to be. And if you think about the world and the planet in terms of the cosmos, it's not as if space has an up and a down. It's not as if there's a heaven is up here and hell is down here and everything that points towards up is heavenly. In fact, there is really no up or down in space. And so this map is just as accurate as the ones that we are accustomed to. But it still feels so wrong, right? Because it's so different from what we're used to. And the reason, I think you probably all know this, the reason that we are used to the maps that we often see and the globes that we often see is because they were created by Europeans and by people from North America. And so, naturally, they would highlight Europe and North America as being the focal point of the maps. Whereas you get a map like this, and what's the focal point is just this huge swath of Pacific Ocean. In fact, this is made even more prominent by this globe here. This is the world turned upside down. It's a sculpture by Mark Wallinger. It's on Sheffield Street in London on the campus of the London School of Economics. And much like our map, it is upside down, but all of the text is legible from this angle. It's all right side up, so everything is written as if this were the sort of the natural depiction of it. And what most people have pointed out with this map, not only the diminishment of Europe and the United States, but also just the massiveness of the Pacific Ocean. But it's hard to see these things, right? It's hard to kind of put our minds around something that is so very different, something that is so upside down. In fact, in our bulletin today, we have lots of things that are turned upside down. If you look at the front cover, obviously, is the same right side up as it is upside down. And all of the pictures that are inside of our bulletin all depict an animal. And then if you turn it upside down, you will see that it is a different animal. These are inspired by an 18th century artist. I do not remember the name, but this was part of an ad campaign. And the idea was that you can kind of look at things the way you want to look at them. Try looking at things from different perspectives. And the reason that I'm using this illustration this morning is because when Jesus appeared to the disciples in this story and throughout the post-resurrection stories, it really messed with them. It was really hard to comprehend because the resurrection had turned everything that they knew upside down. It had completely made them rethink everything that was possible. And it was humorous. And I don't mean humorous in the way that we might think of like a stand-up comedian making jokes and us laughing at them humorous. But it possessed a lot of the qualities that humor has. One of the qualities was that it was preposterous. It was unbelievable, right? It was hard to fathom. It didn't make sense. Because Jesus didn't just appear to them as a ghost. It didn't appear to them as an idea or as a spirit or as an angel, but as it says, as a flesh and blood person. He says, look at my hands, look at my feet. And then he says, well, can I get some fish? And this word preposterous, it originally comes from this idea of having a head and a tail and a head tail. So this idea of having, it was originally meant to describe animals that either had two heads or two tails. So it had a head where the tail was or a tail where the head was. So that is, had a pre in the post and a post in the pre and pre and posterous. So it had what was supposed to be in the beginning was at the end. What was at the end was at the beginning. So that's where that sort of word comes from. I think of the cartoon Cat Dog. I don't know if you've ever seen Cat Dog. It was a fun cartoon when I was a kid. But Cat Dog is a preposterous figure. It's got a head where the back is supposed to be. But Jesus was always about the preposterous. Not so much in the way of this way, but just in the way of exaggeration, right? Of making things way bigger than they needed to be. Giving these illustrations that were so far and away exaggerated that people would remember them, right? Even people who don't read the Bible sometimes hear the expression getting the camel through the eye of a needle. And they understand what that means because a camel is, even if we take it, people have taken it to mean, no, he meant like trying to get through traffic in Jerusalem is really tough. Or it could have just meant that he was trying to get a camel through the eye of a needle. We think about when Jesus says, you're so worried about the speck in your neighbor's eye that you're neglecting the plank coming out of your own eye, which is a ridiculous imagery, but is one that sticks with people. But one of the ones I like the best is this idea of the parable of the debtor, the two debtors. You have the one debtor who's forgiven this amount of money and then goes out and refuses to forgive another debtor. And this idea of God has given us so much grace that we need to extend grace to others. Well, the amounts that Jesus uses in this parable are ridiculously exaggerated. One person said it would be like saying if someone forgave you $1 billion debt and then you went out and were yelling at someone for owing you $100. Because this idea, because he wanted to emphasize that the grace and mercy of God was exaggerated. So in the case of the resurrection, it's hard to believe, right? It's hard for us to comprehend that this idea of someone being resurrected from the dead, because it doesn't fit in with what we know to be. But even then, when science wasn't advanced as it is now, it was still hard for them to comprehend. It was still hard for them to believe. They still struggled with it. Because they knew that death was final, and that if death wasn't final, it would have turned everything upside down. If death was not the final answer, then that could mean that any of these things could be true, and the preposterous had been revealed to them. Now, speaking of everything being turned upside down, it was also paradoxical. Now, paradox is used often as a writing tool, but it's often used in humor as well, when we have these two ideas that really don't seem to be able to go together, and then in a way that we find they do go together, that paradox often will make us laugh. It's like this shape cannot exist. It's a paradox, and yet we look at it and we see it as a shape, right? We see that there is some kind of shape to it. We see the lines and the shadows and the contours, and it seems like a shape, but then if we look closely, it's clearly not a shape. That is its paradox. And one of the funny paradoxes that I think is present in this story, and again, I want to be emphasized, this is my own interpretation of this story, but Jesus comes into this room. And Jesus always entered in a sort of fantastical way post-resurrection. It was never like Jesus just knocked on the door and they let him in and he said, "Oh, hi, remember me, I'm Jesus." No, the doors were locked and he would just appear there. Or he would be sitting with someone for a long period of time and they would have no idea that it was him. And then all of a sudden, it was revealed to them and their eyes were open. And I think because this idea of revelation and being revealed is an idea that carries over even as these Gospels were written after Jesus' ascension, that the revelation that people had of the presence of Jesus was very much like this, that it was revealing. And so it was this amazing, remarkable thing. Not only had he resurrected from the dead, which in and of itself was remarkable, but he had appeared in this room in a way that was remarkable. And yet, Jesus doesn't remark about it. Jesus doesn't remark, doesn't say, "Isn't it amazing that I have resurrected? Aren't I so great? Aren't I so cool?" In fact, he makes this really kind of mundane request of, "You got any food? I could really go for some fish." And we interpret that to mean that he was trying to really explain to them that he was human, that he was flesh and blood. But on another level, it's really just kind of funny in that it's such a mundane thing, eating a piece of fish amidst this incredible, fantastical event. And I think that one of the other reasons is it's to show us how Jesus maintains his humility. That even after he becomes this resurrected person, even after this resurrection, when it's sort of the revealed about he is God in man and the divinity is within him, he still maintains this humble feeling, this idea of relationship, of community, of fellowship, of friendship. These are his closest friends, and he wants to bond with them and share some of this food. And paradox is not something that is new after the resurrection, right? Jesus constantly spoke in paradoxes. The meek shall inherit the earth. The last shall be called first. Love will triumph over force. If the greatest of these paradoxes could be true, the paradox of being alive while being dead, if this paradox could be true, then that meant for his disciples that all of the paradoxes could be true. That everything that he had been teaching them could be true. And so that's when the scripture says their minds were open to all that he had been saying his whole life. This was nothing new to him. the paradox of the last shall be first, the meek shall inherit the earth, that the least of these shall be the greatest. This is something that he had been preaching out his whole life. And not only preaching with words, but demonstrating with his life. And so his call to them was to demonstrate it as well. And the last thing I just want to say is that this story of the resurrection, one of the really interesting qualities about it is that it's earthbound. That it happens on earth. That it happens in the midst of people. It is not something that we are told happens in a heavenly realm, what happened to Jesus after he died, and things that are happened in a celestial time. It is not something that God gave messages about post-crucifixion, that, oh, here's what happened to Jesus, and tells them. No, this is something that happened in front of everybody. And I think that, and I know this is a bit of a stretch, but I think that one of these things, the reason that it does is because it is so that the people could relate to it. That if they saw it in front of them, they could relate to it. And I think some of the greatest humor is universal because it's humor that we all relate to. When you see yourself in a character, and when you relate to them, then it gives you more willingness to laugh at them, to laugh at their foibles, because you recognize yourself in that. The most remarkable thing about the resurrection is that God did it on earth. It was an earthly one because it was meant to turn the world upside down. New life, salvation, redemption, whatever you pull from this resurrection story, it was something that happened on earth and it changed everything. And it is in the disciples in this story that we see how the transformation takes place. We see how their worlds were slowly turned upside down. At the beginning of the story, they start with what? Fear. Jesus comes in and they are afraid. And he says, don't be afraid. It's me. Touch my hands. Feel me. Feed me some of your fish. I'm starving. I've been in the ground for 2 days. And then it moves to joy, but bewilderment. This is amazing, but I don't know what to make of it. I'm happy that Jesus is here, but I don't understand how. Right? Joy, but bewilderment. But when everything is revealed to the disciples, when all of the messaging and their minds are open to everything that Jesus had said before, they go from bewilderment to acceptance. And at that point, they are ready to go and spread this word throughout the world. And that is the peace that Jesus gives to his disciples, that they need not be afraid, that they may not be bewildered, that they can trust and know that this is true. And they can go and tell others about it. So if all this is so, if everything that Jesus has said is so, why waste another moment living in fear? No longer need to be in fear, but instead to live a life that is reflective of the life that Jesus left. To believe in the messaging of the importance of humility and love, and to tell others so that they also may do likewise. May we also hear this revelation that the disciples heard and do likewise in our lives. And the people said, amen.